Bibles to the passage that we read earlier in 2 Kings chapter 4, an altogether fascinating story that is full of spiritual instruction. As I pointed out in introducing the scripture reading, in the ongoing story of Elisha, we read last Sunday evening chapter 4 verses 1 to 7, and we studied that fairly comprehensively. We missed out tonight's story, and then we read the two stories at the end of chapter 4 and the story at the beginning of chapter 6. And in these passages we are shown that a series of incidents or events, briefly described, relating to a variety of situations in the right at the start of the ministry of the prophet Elisha. And in these different situations we are shown how the grace of God meets human needs. In last Sunday evening's story, the oil that kept pouring as long as there were jars to fill up, we are shown the grace of God meeting human needs. When we come to the other stories next Sunday, the story of the sons of the prophets, the divinity students, and remember, somebody put vegetables or something into the soup pot and it was poison. But that was healed. The grace of God dealing with human mistakes. And I find that a great comfort. The next story is the story of the sons of the prophet. It was their Bible college, and there wasn't enough food, and a man came along with a certain amount of food, and, well, obviously it wasn't enough to feed all the college, but it fed all the college. The grace of God meeting human inadequacies, and that means a lot to me as well. And then the final story that we read last week, chapter 6, verses 1 to 7, how they were chopping down trees, and this man who had borrowed an axe, and the head of the axe flew off and into the water. Oh, great panic. But it was recovered. The grace of God dealing with all that we would call accidents. And within these four incidents, we have set before us tonight the story of the Shunammite woman. It's a longer story. It's given to us in much more detail. It obviously is a story that covers a number of years, because the young baby boy who was born was now old enough to go out into the fields along with the others at harvest time. It is a story of the grace of God in the baffling things of human experience. And there's a lot of baffling things in human experience. A lot of things that happen about which we say, why? Why had this to happen? And so very often when we ask that kind of question, there is no immediate answer. There may be no answer long term. There may not be an answer till we get to heaven. But here we have a story of the grace of God operating in the baffling things of human experience. And in the story, we have the four characters: the woman, her husband, Gehazi, the servant of the prophet, and of course, the prophet himself. And we're going to speak about the husband first of all, to get him out of the way. Because the more I read this story, the more I feel that he wasn't a very nice man. And if you're not a very nice man, you're not likely to be a very nice husband. And the not niceness of the husband, I think, highlights the woman's grace and the woman's godliness. If you were following the story carefully, and I tried to put a lot of meaning into it as I read it, you will have seen that this husband was a man who was absorbed in his business life, and not very interested in his wife's feelings or his wife's activities or his wife's needs. We are not told in the story anything about the husband's reaction to the possibility and then the arrival of a late baby. We are told in verses 19 and 20 of the chapter when this young lad became so terribly ill out in the harvest fields, his father stayed with the reapers. He stayed with the workers and said to himself, take the laddie home to his mother. You would have thought, in the years that that young lad grew up in the house, you would have thought that that father would have had something of a warmness of heart towards his only son, and would have picked him up and himself carried him home, but not a bit of it with this particular husband. And when we come to verses 20 to 23, when she called on her husband, well, the man knew about the boy's illness. The man knew about the woman's faith. The man knew about the prophet Elisha, because the prophet had all often stayed in the upstairs room in the house. But when the woman sent to her husband for help, send the servant with one of the ashes, his reaction was, what's the hurry? Why do you want to go to the prophet? It's not one of the high days or holy days. It's a kind of thing that is sometimes said by people nowadays when somebody's going to church. What are you going to church for today? It's not Communion Sunday. You know, the kind of people who turn up on Communion Sunday, they're never in the church any other time. They turn up on Communion Sunday in the hope that that'll keep their name on the membership roll. You see what I mean when I say that this husband wasn't a very nice man? Whether he knew that the child had died or not, I cannot tell. I tend to feel that he wasn't very interested, and he disappears from the story, and I must confess that I don't miss him from the story. And so we turn to the woman. She lived in this place called Shunem, verse 8. Now, Shunem was near the city of Jezreel. And Jezreel was in the territory of Jezebel, the wicked, wicked widow of the evil King Ahab. That was her territory. Yes, she was still alive, and we are not told about her rather pathetic death until we come towards the end of chapter 9 of 2 Kings. She was still there. And she was the kind of woman that if she was there, she exercised influence. And I believe that the baneful influence of Jezebel was still having an effect, making it very, very difficult for people to be men and women of faith, to be men and women of godliness. The whole atmosphere created by Jezebel was against spirituality. I'm sure you've come across some people like that in the course of your daily life and your daily work. People who have something of an aura of evil about them. You know sometimes, you know, I've worked in office situations and all the rest of it, same as some of you have done. I've been in various groups of people and in company of different kinds of people, and everything has been remarkably pleasant. And then somebody has arrived, and you're aware almost as soon as they arrive that, as it were, the temperature's going down, spiritually speaking. And you're aware of it. Well, Jezebel was a woman like that. And she exercised this kind of influence in the whole area round about Shunem, making it a place where it would be very difficult to be godly. But in that situation, we have this woman. It's nothing to do with the fact that she was wealthy. Wealth doesn't make you spiritual, and wealth doesn't stop you being spiritual. But in the kind of situation and atmosphere that I've described, we have this woman who was obviously a gracious woman. Wouldn't you agree? I hope you do. She was gracious. She was godly. And she was generous-hearted. And it's more important to be generous with your heart than to be generous with your hands, although the two very often go together. She was gracious, she was godly, she was generous. And she recognized this prophet of God, who was going backwards and forwards on his travels. She recognized Elisha as a true man of God, and she extended the hospitality of her home. She invited him for a meal. And she did so the next time he was passing by, and there came the point where Elisha became a very welcome, regular visitor to that home. And the woman was glad to serve. And she said to her husband, "Now look, this is a man of God, and we're well able to do it, and I'm glad to do it. Let's make him a room and furnish it, and that'll be his lodging place." And it would appear that the husband agreed. We'll give him credit for that. He may very well have said, "Oh, please yourself." Which really is a terrible thing to say. And so the situation developed and came to the point, verse 11, when Elisha came and turned into the chamber and rested there. And he was very grateful for the kindness of this woman. She wasn't only kind-hearted, you see, she expressed her kind-heartedness. And Elisha said to his servant, "Go and call the woman." And Elisha said, "Now you've been tremendously kind to us. Is there anything we can do for you?" Now you see, Elisha the prophet wasn't taking for granted the many, many kindnesses that had been expressed to him, that had been shown to him. And he was very aware of the fact that gratitude needs to be expressed to people as well as to God. And he said, "Is there anything we can do for you?" Well, you say, that's very natural. Yes, but just a word of caution. We need to learn, and it's not easy, human nature being what it is, we need to learn to accept kindness without immediately trying to repay it. I've always chuckled, I've never quite understood it, that at Christmas time, or getting near Christmas time, for example, the post comes and, "Oh, somebody sent you a Christmas card." And you immediately, "Oh, I better get one," and send. But why? We need to learn to accept kindness shown without necessarily immediately repaying it, because very often when we do try to repay kindness, we try to do it on a bigger scale than the kindness that has been shown to us. And this is just perversity, it is foolishness. So to get back to the story, laying aside the wrong kind of independence, What the woman had done in providing a room for Elisha had been done in faith. It had been done for God. It had been done in answer to God's goodness to her. Doesn't mean that she didn't have problems. Remember, she was childless. And when Elisha the prophet called her and said, "See, you have taken all this trouble for us," verse 13, "what is to be done for you?" I don't quite know why Elisha said, "Would you like a word spoken on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army?" I really don't understand why he said that. But he said, "Look, what can we do for you?" In verse 13, the woman said to him, or verse 14, end of verse 13, "I dwell among mine own people." And as I indicated in the scripture reading, I think what she was saying, but I'm quite content the way I am. Godliness with contentment, says the New Testament, is great gain. It's really wonderful to be content. You don't have to have everything that you would like to have in order to be content. This woman didn't have everything that she would have liked to have had, but she was content. Oh, there's a whole world of grace in her words here. She said, I dwell among my own people. But she was childless. And for an Israelite woman, that was sore. Not only was it naturally and humanly sore, in the culture in which she lived, being childless was really a disgrace. And being childless tended to be interpreted that in some way God was against her, against you. There must be some explanation, foolish people said, for your being childless. This was her situation. Was she disappointed that she had never had children? I'm sure she was. But she had accepted it in faith. And she was content. She said, I dwell among my own people. I've got a full life. There are so many things that I can do for other people. I'm quite sure Elisha wasn't the only person who was at the receiving end of her warm-hearted kindness. Oh, I can imagine this woman being the kind of woman who quite quietly, without any fuss, would go perhaps to some home where there might be two or three bairns, and she would do the washing or she would do the ironing. She would never let on about it. If her husband said, where did you go today? She wouldn't go, oh, I did this and I did that for... No. Oh, I went to visit one or two people. I think she was that kind of woman. She was gracious. And she was godly. And she had accepted her situation of childlessness, sore though it was. She accepted it in faith, recognizing that it is God who gives and it is God who withholds in every area of life, including the area of marriage. And we have to recognize that marriage is a gift from God. We say this usually at weddings we conduct here. Marriage is a gift from God. It is not a right. And this woman had accepted her situation. And her experience of denial had not made her hard or bitter or difficult. There was a grace about her whole personality and life. She was spiritually minded, but she was totally human. And I'm quite sure she was totally human, because in answer to Elisha, who said, at this season when the time comes round you shall embrace a son, she said, oh no, don't say that. That was her, she blurted it out straight away. Don't say that. It hadn't been easy for her to accept her situation. And here she was aware of the fact that the prophet's words were awakening feelings that she felt she had really come to terms with, but they were still there. And she said, oh, man of God, don't talk like that. Don't make that kind of suggestion. But then you see, Elisha the prophet was quite sure that this was God's clear word and clear will, and it was for her blessing. But she shrank back from it. Oh, she was very human, this woman. We'll be singing at the end of the sermon, God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. Here was God about to do something to her by way of fulfillment. that she had long, long accepted would never be for her. And she was frightened. And these feelings, maternal feelings, if you like, began to stir. Oh, don't say that, don't say that. And she shrank back. But in due time, the child was born. Can you imagine the joy of the woman? Discovering that the word of God to her, which had first seemed hard and even cruel, proved to be the word of blessing, and a whole new life of joy opened up to her. Now think, this being a godly, gracious, good woman, think of her prayers of thanksgiving to God. Can you imagine her putting the wee one to bed, and as she herself went to bed, saying her prayers and, giving thanks to God from a full heart and maybe with quivering voice, giving thanks to God for giving this blessing to her, she deserving it so little, she would say. And then when you come to verses 19 and 20, the whole thing was shattered. She had the son she never thought would be hers. She rejoiced and gave thanks to God for answered prayer. And now her son was dead. Yes, I'm pausing to give myself time to think and to give you time to think. Think of this broken-hearted woman who perhaps in her heart of hearts was saying, why? 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 But then you see, it's not recorded in the story that she said why. Her reaction is recorded very, very clearly. Verse 21, she went up and laid the dead boy on the bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out and set about going to visit the prophet. Her first reaction was, she looked to God. Now, I'm quite sure she didn't understand the situation. I'm quite sure she felt it very, very deeply. I don't know that she even took time to try to interpret the situation. I believe she went right to God. She looked to God, and the lifeless body was laid in Elisha's room. As I sat and thought about this in terms of preparation, I found myself going to the story of Lazarus, the friend of Jesus who died, and how Lazarus' two sisters said, oh, if only Jesus had been here. And I can imagine the one, oh, if only Elisha had been here when the boy came home so seriously ill. But she didn't waste time. She set out at once to go to the prophet Elisha. Her first reaction, as I say, was she turned to God, and she did so with a measure of confidence. Verse 23, when the husband said, why will you go to him today? It's neither new moon nor Sabbath. She said, it will be well. I believe that was an expression of trust. And off she went, the 25 miles. Then in verses 25 and 26, we are told the next incident, the next stage of the story. Elisha saw the woman coming near, and he was instantly aware that there was something wrong. There was concern in his heart. He was aware that there was concern in the woman. And he said to his servant, go run at once to meet her. Say to her, is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child? Find out what is wrong. Go, don't waste. Oh, I suppose there's a picture here of how the great God of eternity and his Son, Jesus Christ, hurries to our side when we're in need. You haven't to beseech him from afar, hoping that perhaps if he considers it long enough, he might find it in his mind and heart to come to us. Not a bit of it. It's like the story of the father of the prodigal son. The only incident, I think, in the Bible where God is portrayed as being in a hurry. The father ran to meet. Oh, I love this story. Elisha said to Gehazi, go on, man, run. I think he did say it a few times because Gehazi was never just a very active sort of chap. Go. And Gehazi went and asked the questions, and the woman said, I'm all right. She declined to open her heart to Gehazi. We'll see the reason for that in subsequent Sunday evenings. I think perhaps she, dare I say it, she brushed him off or brushed past him. It was Elisha she wanted to speak to. And she came down at the feet of Elisha the prophet. And of course Gehazi was a bit miffed. She wouldn't speak to me. And he tried to, come on, don't bother the prophet like that. And Elisha said, leave her alone. She is in bitter distress. And the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me. And Elisha seems to be rather surprised that God hadn't warned him about the developments in this situation. Elisha, perhaps, well, now, if I'd only been aware, I could have prepared to help this woman. But I think perhaps God felt that Elisha was the kind of man who was always prepared. And Elisha said, the woman is in distress. And in verse 28, the woman said to Elisha, I don't know how to put the emphasis in these words, were there tears running down her face when she said this? Did I ask my Lord for a son? Or was she so upset that she was a bit angry? Did I ask you to give me a son? I don't know. You think of your own reactions in this kind of situation. She blurted it out. I suppose in a sense she said, why? Why did you not leave me the way that I was? I was quite content. And having given me a son, why should he have to die? Yes, the woman was in great distress, understandably. And the prophet, verse 29, said to Gehazi, get up your loins. I don't think, Gehazi wasn't the kind of man who liked being told to hurry. He didn't like being told, no, get on with it, man. Get up your loins, take my staff, the prophet's staff, the symbol of God's authority. Take my staff in your hand and go. If you meet anyone, don't salute him. If anyone salutes you, don't reply, because saluting in the East meant that you stopped and you had a long palaver of conversation, a two-way conversation. There's no time for that, said Elisha. Get there and lay my staff on the face of the child. And the mother of the child said, as the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. I'm not going with Gehazi. I'm staying with you. So Elisha arose and followed her. I suppose I should ask here the question, was this woman trusting in the prophet rather than God? I don't think so. Was she feeling safe with the prophet in a way that she didn't feel safe with Gehazi? I think yes. It's awfully important to be the kind of people that other people can feel safe with. There's a lot of trust in that. And so Gehazi went. An interesting story. Gehazi went on ahead, verse 31, laid the staff of God's authority upon the face of the child, but there was no sound or sign of life. Therefore he returned to meet him and told Elisha, the child hasn't wakened. The prophet's staff, the symbol of God's authority, had no power at all in the hand of Gehazi. Now you see, Gehazi, Elisha's servant, went to the right place as he had been commanded. He did the right things as he had been commanded. He said the right words. But there was no result. And on his return, he simply said, the child's not awake. I feel that this man was just a little bit too detached from the agony of the situation to be much use to anybody. I'm almost tempted to think that in measure, here we have a man who's supposed to be a man of God, somewhat indifferent. Here is a man who had kept company with Elisha for some considerable time. He had heard the teaching of Elisha. He had seen the miracles of Elisha. But he seemed to have learned nothing. And nothing of the prophet's grace and care and faith had seemed to have rubbed off on Gehazi. There was no life-giving unction on his ministry. We'll see more of that in later studies. I sat and pondered this, of how the power of God was powerless in Gehazi's hands. And I sat for my own benefit and pondered the words of Paul at the beginning, as it of his first letter to the Corinthians, where he speaks about being so clever or so wrong in our attitude in dealing with what belongs to God, that we make the cross of Christ of no effect. Isn't that frightening? That we can be the kind of people with the kind of attitudes and the kind of life that when handling God's gospel, we drain it of all its power. And I'm glad in the end to turn to Elisha. And I read this story when Elisha came in, verse 32, to the woman's house. He saw the child lying dead on his bed. Oh, I think I know how he felt. Well, after all, I am a minister. So he went in and shut the door upon the two of them. Not quite sure why he did that. Maybe he felt he needed to be alone with God. And all of us need that sometimes. Just to be alone with God, that we might face and ponder and deal with the difficult, perplexing, painful situations of life. But as we read these verses, and strange verses in some ways, 32 down to verse 37, what we see is Elisha, God's prophet, personally involved. We see him with his heart involved. We see him at prayer. We see him earnest in his prayer, but not emotional. It's very important. Being earnest doesn't necessarily mean being emotional. And being emotional in the area of spiritual things doesn't necessarily mean you're being earnest. He was earnest, but he was not emotional. And in a very real sense, he gave himself to the child. He identified with the child. Mouth upon mouth, hands upon hands, eyes upon eyes. It's almost as if Elisha was saying, God, God, I'd gladly give my life for this child. And I sat at home and thought about it. And I thought about the mocking words, which were very true words, that the scornful enemies of Jesus spoke to him as he hung on the cross. He saved others. Himself, he cannot save. Elisha was willing to die for this child. And there are many, many ways of dying to self other than dying physically. But I think that is the heart of all fruitful Christian service. How long this took, I do not know. I'm told in verse 35 that he got up again and walked once to and fro in the house, went up and stretched himself upon the child again. Can you imagine Elisha pacing backwards? Oh, what a burden of agonizing love was in the prophet's prayers. How long did it last? I don't know. But in the end, the child opened his eyes. I suppose, yes, I'm human as well. The child sneezed 7 times and opened his eyes. I'm sure he saw Elisha laughing. Not laughing at the child, maybe laughing with sheer relief. Then he summoned Gehazi and said, call the Shunammite. And he called her. When she came to him, he said, take up your son. And she came and fell at his feet, bowing to the ground. Oh, she didn't say that. She didn't say, I didn't ask for a son. She didn't say, oh, why should all this have... No, no. You see, this woman, didn't we sing a hymn? Oh, for a faith that will not shrink. And in this last scene, I can imagine Elisha saying to the woman, now, my dear lady, whatever happens, oh, he said, now, learn from this. I know what you've been through. Learn from this. Whatever happens, however baffling, however contradictory it may seem, whatever happens, trust God. Yes, I can imagine the woman later on with her own son and pondering, why did it all have to happen this way? There's no answer to that question, as I said at the beginning. God's ways are past finding out. But I believe that that woman's faith was stronger at the end than the beginning. I believe that woman's love for God was deeper at the end than it was at the beginning. I believe with all my heart that that woman's life was richer and her service was fuller after these baffling, painful experiences than they had been before. And Elisha would say, now, my dear lady, whatever happens, trust God, because he is the God. This is what I say to you. Trust God, because he is the God who spared not even his own son, but gave him up for you. Can you not trust a God like that? Because that God of unchanging and unending love is always saying to us, now my child, my purpose and all my dealings with you are for your blessing. Thanks be to God for that. Now let's sing our closing hymn.